listening to New Layer, a design podcast with Tanner Christensen and Jasmine Friedel.
What kind of things do you think someone needs to keep in mind when they're joining a new team?
Like joining a company?
It can be joining a new company. It can be joining a team that maybe you're already somewhat familiar with in the same company. Anything like that. When you're joining a new group of people, what kind of things do you need to keep in mind, do, learn about? What are these kind of things, right? So this is an important thing to talk about, I think, because whether you're progressing in your career and you're joining a company for the first time, or you're transitioning within your company to a new team or a new role on a team,
mm-hmm.
you need to understand that this is like a whole new dynamic you will be encountering.
Right.
Your responsibilities may have evolved. Your teammates. Your teammates will definitely have evolved. The culture around you may be different. I think a core part that I'd like to start off with is considering that what worked for you in the past may not work for you moving forward.
Yeah. My reaction when you posed that question was, what do you need to come in with was nothing. Just because you have to give yourself space to learn again when you join something new or for the first time. So obviously you need to come in knowing what the job is, you know, knowing who your manager is and some basics about, you know, what space you're going to be working in. But other than that, you need to give yourself space to learn and ramp up.
I like that. I agree with that actually. And I think that goes well with what I was saying. Like, as you join a new company or a new team, it's important to remember that you're coming to a whole new space. And whether you're a student who's like getting your first job or you're a very experienced professional moving to a new team, odds are that things on that team or that company or that group are going to be so different that what got you really successful in the past probably isn't going to work for you in the future. So approaching it with a mindset of, what do they call this? It's like the beginner's mind. Have you heard this before?
Oh yeah.
Where you acknowledge that you're a little naive, or you acknowledge that you don't have all the answers, and that frees up space in your mind to start getting things like context and what is the culture of the team or the company? How do they get things done and how have they gotten to where they're at so far?
So step one, the first thing you should bring to the table is a little bit of humility and openness that you need to learn.
So there's a few reasons this is important, I think. Let's talk about them. The first is that if you come into a team environment and your first instinct is like, you know, I was hired for this job because I'm that good and I'm going to show you all that good. And
there's another phrase for that too. Another design leader was just talking about this in a Slack group where somebody comes in and they're like, I'm going to fix this for you. It's sort of this ego-led approach that says, you hired me for a reason and I will come in and fix, but you don't even know what you're fixing.
It's a hard problem. Honestly, this is something that I've struggled with myself for a long time. And I imagine many, especially designers, do, because you come into this space and as a designer, your instinct is like, fix things. I want to find the problems and fix them.
Well, and most people just want to show their value right away. It can be a very insecure place when you start a new job because you don't have all the context and you don't have everything you need to know. And so you want to, you know, have people know that you earned this and you're going to be good at this, and yet you don't have impact right away. So I think there's an overeagerness sometimes to have that impact, and that can sometimes overstep.
Yes, absolutely. That's exactly right. This is it's a common thing that's written about in leadership books, which I've been reading a lot of lately. So for example, in the book, The First 90 Days, I think mm-hmm. you read that as well. Mm-hmm. He talks about the action imperative, which is exactly like you described. You come in and you start seeing all these problems, or you look around and you see things that just don't look right. Or, you know, it's very obvious to you as a newcomer that things could be better. And so you start like poking around and saying, why are we doing this fragmented, broken way? Let me prove that I'm here for a reason and I'm going to show you the way to fix this. And so, you know, it's this action imperative where you're drawn right to taking action. But it can be really dangerous to do, like you just said, because why? Well, the first thing is this impression that your new peers are going to have of you is not This is someone who can empathize, who can understand that we're up against this like hard problem, or that we've spent the last X number of years working with this challenge and we've landed where we are for a lot of reasons.
Right? Yeah. You don't have the context and knowledge and history. A lot of things that people want to change instantly when they come in, is culture. Like, I had a great culture at the place I was before, or I know the components of a good culture. And so let me come in and share my practices with you. And I want to help, you know, you as the founding team evolve. And that can be, I'll give an example. The last two teams that I came into, both at Udacity and Intercom, something that needed to be evolved was the critique, like how we did critique. It just wasn't established. It wasn't effective. And so I could have come in and said like, hey, I know how to do this really well, so let's just change it to my old way. But instead I had to step back and say like, why is it at this state? How did it get here? What are the actual needs of this group of people? And then design something specifically around those needs. And so that can be risky when you just come in and you say, well, I know how to do it better, without doing that sort of investigatory figuring out what the problems and the needs are.
Yeah, exactly. So the first thing that comes along with this in my mind is setting proper expectations with your peers, with your manager, with yourself. And the way that I think that you can do this is to just put it out on the table, set up early conversations with everyone you can up front. And in that conversation, say, you know, what do you think my role is here? Like, what are your expectations of me? Here's what my initial expectations are of you and your role. And then also, and I think this is really important, you set a standard for an introductory like exploration phase of your new career or your new team, right? You say, for the first week, for the first 2 weeks, for the first 30 days, my goal is to understand this space. And so I'm going to have a lot of conversations. I'm going to ask a lot of questions. I'm going to take a lot of notes. I may contribute something back to the team in the form of questions or proposals that are just like hypothetical, like, hey, what if we did this? But you need to set the stage that you're not going to sit there and like solve all their problems, because you don't even know what the problems are at first. Right.
Right. I think I'd reframe the idea of setting expectations, because when you're coming in as a manager or some type of a leader and you have a team that's reporting to you, that seems really, really valuable to set expectations. That could be taken the wrong way if it's like you're coming in and you're an associate or a mid-level designer and you set the expectations of how you want the people around you to work with you. What you need to do is figure out how to work with each other, and that might feel a little bit different than setting expectations. Setting expectations to me feels something like, here's how you will work with me. And it can be a little bit softer than that, which is like things like, if you're a designer and you're coming into a team that is primarily engineers, do you go to your engineering partners and say, how would you like to work together? Here's how I've worked great with the team in the past. What great experiences have you had? Where have you failed working with design before? And how would you like to forge our relationship together? I think it's less of things like that are very explicit, like, I don't want you involved in my design phase until I'm ready to hand off mocks. That's my expectation. And my expectation is also that before we ship anything, you come back to me and let me do a polish on the design or something like that.
I think we're actually saying the same thing. So I think that the underlining key important thing is to, when I say set expectations, it's develop your own mindset around what people are going to be expecting of you. Do they expect you to be in every conversation? Do they expect you to deliver, you know, 2D tangible artifacts? Do they expect you to deliver those things in a week or two, right? So you first need to understand, like, what is just their mindset around your role? And it could be inaccurate. You may not agree with it. You may not even understand it.
Yeah, we used to do this thing back in agency life that was called, what was it? Hot buttons and like heartstrings or something like that. So basically identifying the things that people really love and need, and then basically their triggers, like things that really sort of piss them off. And so that could be a different framing that you could approach it with. I think what you'll find is sometimes you end up when you do, and you know, say you join a small team of two designers, you have one design manager, and that'll be your boss. And then you have a bunch of other people that you work with, whether it's like brand or engineering, they're PMs. What you'll find that is if you, there's going to be a lot of expectations, and sometimes they'll be in conflict. And so how do you end up sort of prioritizing those expectations so that you know what's really important? And how do you essentially, like, I was going to say prioritize the people, but I don't think that's the right approach. Everyone on your team or that you're working with is going to be valuable and is there at the company for a reason with perhaps a different objective than you. But how do you know who to give you guidance, the strongest guidance in your first days? Sometimes there'll be folks who grab you right away because they know they need to make you an ally or something like that. And probably the best person to go to and to make sure that you're understanding really, truly expectations is your manager, so that you know how to perform in your role.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. So the first step is really going in with this mentality of, like, I don't know everything. I have a lot to offer, but it will have to wait until I have the right context. The second part is developing an understanding of expectations, not necessarily setting them for yourself, but going out and talking to peers and partners and just kind of jotting down what you're hearing from them. What has worked well with them and their partnerships with designers in the past? What did they like? What did they not like? And then, like you just said, Jasmine, what does your manager expect from you? What are they hoping to see from you in the coming days, weeks, months, right?
Yeah. And that's essentially, like, what did they hire you for?
Yeah. Just getting really concrete on this. And I think, at least in my experience, this can be kind of an awkward conversation because it's like, well, of course I should know why I was hired. I should know exactly what I'm here to do. And the job description had that. And we talked about it in my interviews. And yet it's really critical that you get this alignment on why you are there. And so the more you repeat that conversation, especially in the early days, the more capable you will be to go figure out, okay, who else do I need to talk to? Where else do I need to dig?
Right. And I like that you said repeat, because this is something where it's easy when you start a new company to just sort of sit back in your desk. It's a little bit terrifying. You know, there's a bunch of people you don't know. You're learning a lot. You might feel like you're doing things wrong. You might feel like there's too much to learn in a short amount of time, but to just sit back and intake and not be proactive about how you get your information and doing things like setting up meetings with everyone you're going to come into contact with, and then setting them up to be recurring meetings for the people who you're going to be working with on a daily basis, so that you can basically get to know them. And that brings into view sort of the types of conversations that you want to have. I think it's that same book, The First 90 Days, that recommends different kinds of one-on-ones. Like the first, you don't have to do everything in a jam-packed one-on-one and then be like, hey, and we're going to work together and we're going to be great. Like, that's not how work relationships work. You need to build them up over time. So I think the book suggests doing one that's like this is more for managers, but I think it applies to teammates too. One is just like, get to know you. What's your story? How did you get here? Like, what do you love about the company that we're now in together? What did you do before this? And, you know, if it gets into personal space and that's comfortable, that's fine. And then another one is, let's see if I can remember. Oh, then figuring out, like, where you're going. Like, what are your objectives? What are the things that you're excited about? When in the manager space, you're actually talking to your employees about their career paths. And you might not need to talk to, you know, your PM about where you want to go, but you could talk to them or, you know, what you're really excited about, what you really think you're great at, what you're growing in. And then a third one is to really get into the work and go through processes and practices and history and things like that.
Yeah. One of my favorite questions she writes about in that book is, this is a different book. This was, what's it called? Rigorous management or something like that?
Resilient management?
Yeah. There you go. Resilient management. And in that book, she says one of my favorite questions to ask anyone that you're working with is, what makes you grumpy?
Mm-hmm.
And she uses that word intentionally because grumpy is a little bit of a silly word. It's not as off-putting or frightening as some other words that you could use. And the reason she asked that is because she wants to know if she's working with her peers and they're a little bit frustrated or they're, you know, they're overwhelmed or stressed. You as a design partner or as a peer to this other person need to know, you know, okay, maybe this isn't a good time to propose this really scary thing, or maybe I can do something to help alleviate some of the stress and immediately prove some of my value to this team member, right? So it's a good way to kind of better understand.
Yeah. My EA did this for us. We did, all three of our directors did user manuals. And so she created a framework for a user manual, and it was basically just how to work with each of us. And that's not something where you need to come into a new team and be like, we all need to do user manuals, but you could do for one for yourself and share it with a few people. And that is something that might scale up and people start to do it regularly. Another thing some folks do when they're invited to a new team, whether it's sort of in the structure of what people do or not, is just do a little presentation about themselves in a design critique or in a group all hands, or like whatever feels comfortable for what is established within the practices. But you can also do that voluntarily if, you know, with your team at least, if that's something that's not part of the culture, just to sort of create that openness and then see if other folks will follow.
Yeah, that was one thing I really enjoyed about my time at Lyft was all the new hires and the design team presented what they call 3x3s. Mm. And this is essentially 9 slides that go by very quickly. I think there's 30 seconds each, maybe less than that, where the first 3 slides are tell us about you and your history. The next 3 slides are like what brought you here, I think, specifically, and like the work you do. And then the last 3 slides are like what you're most excited about in the future, whether it's working with this company or in your personal life. And I think that was a really great format. I also really like your recommendation, or I guess like your EA did, of like the user manuals, where it's like, here's how to work with me, here's how I've worked in the past, and those kind of things. I also agree with you that that's not the kind of thing that you put together and then in your very first one-on-one say, here, read through this, or let me present this to you. That's not really the right atmosphere for it. But if you have something to refer to people after your first initial conversations, being able to point them there and say, here's just an easy way you can get to know me better, is really great. So why does all this matter? Why do you need to have these conversations? Why is the first conversation establishing that kind of human bond with peers? I think the core part of this is because at the end of the day, you're working with other human beings, and their story is far larger than what you're going to be exposed to. When you come into the office, you know, you are spending a lot of time with these people, but it's helpful to know if they have a family, maybe they have a lot of stress at home. Are they trying to become something other than their current role? Is there an opportunity for you to help them? Are they just burnt out? Are they ready to get out of the company? And secretly, like, they're like just a super negative person at that point. Also, you need to help them understand where you're coming from and your ambitions and who you are as a human being, so that they can work with you and, you know, leverage your strengths or kind of help you grow in your weak areas.
And a really practical way to approach this is to use open-ended questions like how, what, why, where, to learn about other people, rather than saying, are you burned out, which is yes or no, or like, how are you feeling about the company these days? What do you find to be stressful? What do you really enjoy? And allow that conversation to feel to flow organically, especially if you're working with a peer or someone who's a higher level than you are. You don't want to have to interrogate them. One other challenge that I've seen when folks come into a new company is they spend all the time talking about themselves because they feel obligated to share every little bit about them. But that doesn't actually build a relationship. What that does is become sort of this repetitive thing. So say you're coming in as a new designer and, you know, you're having your first one-on-one with a senior designer on the team. They may have some things that they want to talk over with you. Maybe they have an onboarding plan for you. Maybe they have something that they want to make sure that you know. And if you sort of like launch into your, let me tell you about myself and here's the things that I love and here's the things that drive me crazy, like allow for some space in the conversation. And a great way to do that is say, you know, I'm not sure if we have an objective for this conversation, but I'd love to get to know you and then also share a little bit about myself with you. Does that sound good? And get agreement and alignment on that conversation. Pro tip, that's a way to handle any one-on-one is come in and say, here's the things I'd like to accomplish. What would you like to accomplish? And then come to an agreement on that.
Love it. Yes. So part of the importance of this as well, this exercise of getting to know your peers. And let me say 2 things here. The first is that I don't know if everyone else does this. I don't know who else does this. I don't even know if you do this, Jasmine, but I am a big advocate for writing down specific key insights from these conversations and letting your peer know, hey, I'm taking some notes. Ideally you would do it without your phone or your computer, but if you need to write on those, that's fine too. And so as someone's talking to you, you can like, if there's something about them that really captures your attention or that you think is good to know, just make a really quick note about it. And the reason this is important, I think, is 2 parts. One is it helps you kind of better understand the environment of your team. It helps you kind of frame that, and you can always refer back to it. The second part is if you find down the road that someone's just really having a bad day, but you also remember that they are a big outdoor enthusiast, maybe there's something in your notes where you can say, oh, I can get them, you know, a $20 gift card to REI or something. And
you're talking about buying your new employees.
No. I'm saying like if there's something that they care about, that they're passionate about, and you know they're having a hard day, and they don't have to be your employee, they can be just a teammate, right?
You're just talking about building relationships.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, really genuinely learning and caring about people.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't take a notebook or on my first one-on-ones. Often they're walking and that's a little bit weird. What I have done in the past is make sure I like just save 5 minutes after every conversation to jot down anything that felt relevant. Also use really active listening, which is things like repeating back what you hear to make sure that you're grounded and can recollect what the conversation was about. And making sure not to monopolize the conversation so that you actually do learn things.
Love it. That's actually, that's great. You know, take 5 minutes afterward to jot down anything that stuck out to you. I love that. So this is what they, a key part of what they describe. I think it's the four stages of a team forming, right? Is that, do you know what this is called? It was by,
the forming, norming.
Yeah.
Or, the storming, forming, norming, performing.
There you go. Yeah. So, okay. So let's repeat it one more time just so people have it. It's the four stages that every team goes through inevitably. What are they again?
Storming, which is basically about sort of fighting and figuring out, opposition and where things land. Forming is when you start to gel together. Norming is when that becomes sort of like normalized. And then performing is when things start going really well.
Right. So this was actually by a man named Bruce Tuckman. And the stages are forming, storming, norming, and performing. Because at first you're forming.
Oh, yeah. You don't get into this stuff until later. Yeah, you're right.
So you're forming the team. Then you go through a kind of a storming phase where you have these maybe not disagreements necessarily, but your perspectives are trying to get aligned on how you work and what you're working towards. Then there's the norming where now you have established processes. You understand each other a little bit better. And then there's performing where your team is actually able to achieve its objectives.
And it's worth noting too, that like, this isn't about all the team coming together at once. This cycle can have to kick off again when one new person comes in.
Yeah. Or one person leaves. Like every single time there's a change to the structure of the team, this process will repeat itself.
Yep. So you as the new joiner might be the trigger to have to form again. And then you might need to go through some struggles with the team to get it right. And it's okay it's okay for teams to go through struggles. It's okay for you to be the catalyst for some of these struggles, because to get to that performing phase, the whole point is that you have to go through this in order to evolve and become better.
So as you join a new team, you may feel some anxiety around it. Like we talked about earlier, you may have this mentality that you need to kind of prove yourself, or, you know, you might look at the work in front of you and think, wow, this is a lot. I'm a little bit overwhelmed. Maybe you have imposter syndrome. I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I'm the right person to do this. But it's worth noting that your team also likely has some of those same feelings about you and their relationship with you. They're anxious. Will I get along with this person? Will I be able to give them the things they need to do their job well? Also, will they understand my value? Will they understand that I'm a knowledgeable person in my arena and I can provide value? So I think as you go into some of these initial conversations, it can be helpful to keep that mindset in the back of your head. They're also going through this kind of forming stage. They need to understand that they can also provide value. And if you go into the conversations with that mentality, you can actually start to tease out some of those questions or concerns that they also have, and you can bring them to a head.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about the people things. One other thing I'd like to add is this idea of teams. We've sort of talked all over the place about who you might be meeting with. Really, there's usually two teams, unless you're like the only designer. One is sort of your design team. Who are your peer designers that you're going to be working with? They might be working directly with you, or they might be working on different product areas. And the second is your sort of your tech team. So as you're the designer, who's going to be working with you to help design and build the product things that you're going to be working on. And so figuring out how the company looks at them, do they consider a design team first, or are you just a designer on this big team that is embedded within a product team? And so you have to figure out how the organization works in order to prioritize who you talk to first and why. Another thing that brings up for me is, we've talked a lot about the people things, but there's also the product stuff. There's the company stuff. So when you get in, how do you actually ramp up on that?
There's a lot you can do. For me, it honestly goes back to more conversations. It's conversations that with anyone you can really get a seat with. This is depending on the company size, you may be able to get a seat with the CEO and have 15 minutes of their time to talk about how they see the history of the company and the problems they're currently facing and where they view the role of design. You can talk to, you know, the VP or whatever of product. What is their current initiative? On top of that, on top of talking to those people, just like dig through any documentation. Hopefully your company's at a place where there exists some documentation. A key thing here that I've heard a lot about is don't just look internally at documentation, but look externally. Has your company been written about in any like blog or something? Go read that. Go read past employee reviews. They're not always accurate, and you have to keep in mind there's a lot of bias with those. But your purpose is to try to get a broader context of the company and the culture and how things got done and what the company's trying to do.
Yeah, I think you're right. There's, I mean, certain companies, depending on their level of like operational and organizational and like HR maturity, will have different sorts of onboardings. You'll have different access to different people based on how big the company is or just how it's structured or how open they are. Something that whether or not you have an onboarding plan, you can always ask for things like asking for where is our mission? Where do I learn about our vision? Where do I learn about what our values are? Where do I learn about our company strategy? Where do I learn about our product strategy? These are all things that should exist. And you can have, I mean, hopefully if you've thought about it, you can have already asked about these in interviews too. But usually there's some documentation around these things. Like how do I learn about how we work? What's the process we follow? What's the product process? What's the design process? And then, you know, having all that as reading material is awesome. If you don't have it, that's fine too. And then also getting people to walk through it with you, you know, go through it once by yourself, ask, write down a lot of your questions. And then when your manager or peer or whoever counterpart comes in, you can actually say, hey, you know, I wasn't sure, like, how does our vision relate to the work that we're doing? Like, I don't understand the connection. Or, you know, it says we prioritize things in this way, you know, when we prioritize projects, give me some examples of projects that are going on right now. Another thing to do is, you know, say, hey, what are we working on right now and why? And can I get the history of these things? And you'll go through these with different people. So, you know, for the history of the product, you might sit down with your PM and just go through like, hey, where have we been in the past 6 to 12 months? But coming in with really targeted questions, rather than assuming, again, that this will be delivered to you, like you really have to do your due diligence of tracking this down. And then knowing how you learn best. Do you know you need to read through docs a couple times and then have somebody walk through it with you? Do you need to read through something and then practice on a project and then get feedback on it? So making sure that you're not sort of just saying like, oh, one and done, I have access to all of these materials and that's everything I should know about the company. It's no, how do you move forward and apply that?
And you're fortunate when you're just starting out because you have the excuse of being new. So yeah. There's not really anything that could be a dumb question. You can always just say, you know, I'm new, I'm naive. I don't see how these things connect. I can't understand how we got to this place. And if you approach these conversations with that mentality or that perspective of, hey, I'm new, I don't know how this comes together, explain this to me. People aren't going to say like, well, wow, this guy's an idiot. No, they're going to say, oh, you're new and you want to learn. This is great. Like now we have this valuable person on the team who is here to try to like consume this knowledge and then take it to the next level. That's exciting, right? So don't hesitate to use the new excuse.
Yeah, I use that for at least a year.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I mean, you're right. Like there's, once you're 2 years in and you're asking the 101 things, like that'll start to feel embarrassing because you missed your moment. But it's like, I find myself still to this day being like, ooh, I missed over this in my onboarding. I'm going to acknowledge that in a minute and ask the question, because it's always better to ask the question than to not ask the question.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was thinking what else you could do when you're first starting out to help build some of that context and help you onboard a little better. And one of those things is, I believe it was Peter Thiel who came up with this, but the concept of dog fooding.
Oh, yeah.
So this is essentially just using your own product or using your own feature, going through it as a real person might. Maybe you're already familiar with the product. Maybe you're not. It's helpful to just sit down and go through, you know, the environment of the product that you're trying to work on.
Right. And that's easier for, like, let's say you work at a consumer facing company, like something like Snapchat or something like that. That's going to be super easy to do because you can make an account and just have access to anything. If you work at, say, enterprise software, you need to get an account, you need to get a sandbox set up so that you can sort of play around in that without making any changes to somebody else's business. So part of that is figuring out how to do that too. You know, how do we test our tools here? I'd like to really get into our product space.
And depending on the industry you're working in or what kind of product you're working in, there are other outside things you can do to help get you context on not just how your internal company sees the product or the features, but also external customers. So something I personally like to do is a two-parter. One is I will just go to YouTube and look up product name review and then see what people have actually done to review the product. And often through those walkthroughs, people will go through their workflow of the product or feature. And that can be really insightful because they're unbiased. They're being honest. They will show you what they're doing on their screen. And like, it's really helpful. The other thing is when I first join, and again, this depends on your industry, but when I join a new company, I will try to say like, who are our top customer advocates? Can I go have a conversation with them? And this is a little touchy. You need to be very careful here. Just because you do represent the company and there may be established relationships you don't want to get involved with, but go talk to like your sales team or your marketing team. Ask them if there are customers that you think you could sit in on conversations with. If you have a sales team that's trying to sell the product to people, go talk to the top representative and say, can I just shadow one of these calls? Or do you have recordings I can sit in? And that can help you, again, establish real concepts around the product. You can start hearing how your customers talk about the product. That can give you an additional framework for when you join your conversations with your peers from the start, you have this context and you can use the same lingo that your real customers are using.
Yeah. And many companies will have some sort of like support team, and they'll have like customer voice reports or like a user operations team. So making sure that, I think that the best first question to ask is like, how do we learn about our customers? And it could be there's an internal team that helps us. It could be we're looking at, you know, the company really values data insights. So making sure that you're actively, whenever possible and whenever appropriate, using those channels, but also there's a lot of, you know, there'll be stuff like generated from those groups of people, whether it's data or research or customer success. There will be reports and things that you can also go back through. So going back through and making sure you set up those channels as things that you can not only learn from, but also refer back to over time. And that makes me think just one really helpful thing when you're joining a new team is figuring out how you're going to set up all of the work that you have to do. I know so many of us have like organizational habits that like ebb and flow depending on the mood that we're in. Like, do we use our to-do list? Do we use our calendars regularly? Starting fresh with a new team or at a new company is a great way to say like, I'm actually going to go in and be really organized. I'm going to create folders or a reference doc of all of this material. I'm going to create reminders for me to check the incoming, customer voice reports every month. So just making sure that you know where these channels are coming from and what they're for, but also how to incorporate them in your daily work and how to make them continually useful rather than just your onboarding.
I love that. My last manager talked a lot about this, in that anytime you join a new team, it's really a fresh start for you, because more often than not, these are people who don't really know you, probably. They haven't worked with you
good
in the
past. Good and bad, yeah.
Yeah, good and bad. So it's a chance for you to kind of say, what worked really well in my past relationships? How can I leverage that here if it makes sense to do so? But also, what did I get wrong? What do I wish I could do differently? Now's your chance to do that. You can't do either of those things, however, if you don't take time to think about it. So again, the way I really view this onboarding experience for any new person joining a team or joining a new company, take a week, take 2 weeks, whatever you need, make sure you establish that timeline with your manager. Just have those conversations. Set aside time on your calendar where you can sit down and just think, reflect. What's working well? What's not working well? How is this team working? Do they use Asana? Do they use Jira? Are they just
ramping up on tools is another thing.
Yeah. But you need to set aside time to have those conversations and have that reflection and then create an action plan for yourself if that's what works.
And you will find sometimes when you join new teams, they're like, quick, there's a project. We got to get this done. Go. And it's not really conducive to a comfortable onboarding plan. That's fine too. You still have to sort of work around that to make sure you're learning what you need to learn. And 1 to 2 weeks sounds awesome. Like in reality, most people take about 6 months to ramp up. I wouldn't recommend going to your manager and being like, well, I need 6 months because they did hire you for the job to start immediately. But, you know, be conscious of it, whether it's through goal setting or, you know, checking off an onboarding list as you go through that time. How are you keeping track of what you intend to learn, what you have learned, and where you're at? Like, these things come in not only helpful in just like keeping track of how you're ramping up, but also in things like your first performance review, and feeling good about yourself in terms of how much you've learned and how far you have left to go. Also sort of like creating baselines for your relationships and how you work together, and understanding how you can contribute over time. Like, you might not understand what you have uniquely to bring to your team until you're like 3 or 4 months in. And that's okay. If you've been listening and learning, and sort of like actively practicing, those things might be revealed to you over time.
Yeah. And that 6 month timeline, that's a really curious thing, because almost everywhere I've personally worked, it is consistently taken 6 months for me to feel like I have some context of what's going on and how I can contribute.
Yeah.
And it's a common thing that I've actually heard from other people as well. You might start feeling a little bit more established and knowledgeable at around 3 months, but it really isn't until 6 months that you're like, okay, now I know what we're doing and how I can contribute. And then probably even a year until you're actually at your like a full stride.
For me, it's always been 6 months where I'm like, yes, I get this. And I have this, like, I am the king. Like, I get this. I am amazing. And then it hits me again around a year that I don't know anything. So you go through these moments where you're like, you feel like you've achieved something and you feel connected. And then you realize there's always more.
It's part of the exciting part, in my opinion, about working in a business where there's so much constant change and evolution. The industry outside of your company's evolving, the company's evolving, your team will evolve. And that's just a natural part of the work that we're doing. So I think a really cool takeaway from this conversation is everything we've talked about can apply to your job, even if you're not changing teams or not joining a new company. It's important.
Spoiler.
It's important to have these established relationships, to build these bonds with your peers. It's important to understand your context and how you work and what value you provide. It's important to set aside time to reflect. These are all things that you can do throughout your entire career. And I think that'll just prove valuable if you do that.
Yep.
Was there anything else?
I could open a whole new can of worms, but I'm not sure.
What is it? Let's hear it.
Oh, it's not really a can of worms. The flip side was, how can you, when you have people joining your team, like, is there a top three things that you would recommend for folks who have an inbound teammate, not managers, but people who are expecting someone to fill a gap on their team?
Yeah. So this is, you're a designer and someone new is joining your team.
Yeah. Oh, I guess I was like, not even a designer, but we do talk towards designers. So yes, you are right. I forgot podcast. Who we are and what we do.
Yeah. So I think there are a few things that you could do here. And the first is, on reflecting of everything we just talked about, remember that someone new to the team is going to be experiencing those same things. So really, how can you help them?
Yep.
And one of those things that I think about is, if you have recently, or if you're going to change teams or join a new company soon, as you go through everything we just talked about, it's helpful to kind of write those things down. You know, your concerns, your processes, what conversations you had. I personally view it as a journaling exercise where at the end of my day, I have 10 minutes set aside just to journal personally. No one's ever going to see this. But then what that does is that says, okay, well, what was the framework I used and what was helpful for me and what was not helpful for me? And so when someone else joins my team, I might be able to say, hey, you know, welcome. Here's our one-on-one, whatever. Here's a few things that I found really helpful when I was onboarding. You may also find them helpful. I would just give them as recommendations, whether it's people to talk to, ways to look at the tools, you know, that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah. So there's two ways to do that. One is like, one is sort of more proactive, and not meaning this is a better way, but here's a bunch of stuff that I found helpful. Or you can just say, how can I support you? What are you nervous about? Who can I connect you with? Knowing that your priorities may have been different too. Another thing, is to, I think, just be positive and open, be an advocate for the team, for the company. Even if you are a designer who maybe is struggling with the company or struggling with your role or your manager, like, it's not really the time to air your dirty laundry. It's the time to really set this person up to do well and to make them confident, in the role that they took, in the company that they joined, and you as a teammate. And those first few interactions, the positivity and the engagement really matter. So in addition to like setting yourself up as a resource, setting yourself up as an advocate for the company.
Absolutely love that. One of the questions I love to talk with my peers about when I first join a team is always, what are you excited about? And let me tell you what I'm excited about. And just that focus on like, what is exciting? What's around the corner for the team or the company can help set the stage for many, many conversations to come.
Yep. I think another one that I'd add is be available. Like it doesn't mean that you have to always have like one-on-ones or be filling in for information. But when somebody joins a new team, it can be pretty lonely. It can be pretty scary. You're sitting at your desk. No one comes over to say hi. Like you're just kind of looking around at like 30 strangers going, cool, I guess this is my life now. You know, going over and saying, hey, how's it going? Or inviting, you know, new teammates to lunch or setting up those one-on-ones or just, you know, messaging on Slack. Hey, just got in. Let me know if there's anything you need today. So creating a really supportive environment through just presence, I think is really helpful too.
Absolutely. And that's so critical. Let's end on this because I have one final question for you around what you just said about being available and kind of approaching the new person. I think that's completely just overwhelmingly valuable for any team member just to feel included, right? And even if the person like rejects the first few invitations for lunch or something, keep asking them. Okay, but here's my question. If you're a designer on a team and you have someone new joining and you see that they're consistently just sitting at their desk, maybe onboarding or something, and maybe they're a little shy, but you are also shy and you're also an introvert, what can you do to help bridge that gap and make them feel welcome? Do you have any ideas?
I mean, I am an introvert and that is me. First of all, I think like you have to realize that when people feel connected and valued, it doesn't have to be the same way that you do. So figuring out like actually sitting at lunch with people every day might be like terrible for somebody who's super introverted. And so opening yourself up, and this is sometimes stepping out of your comfort zone, but like, hey, I haven't noticed you, you know, I've noticed you haven't been coming to our team lunches. Like, is there another way that we can, or that I can connect with you? Or, you know, do you prefer one-on-one conversations to like group conversations? I think just like really finding a way to understand the person. And sometimes you can do that through a one-on-one and just say like, hey, we have these rituals. You know, here's the ones that are optional. If those don't feel right to you, let me know and we can always try and figure out something else. I think there's just a flexibility and understanding that every human has their own sort of personality preferences and style and their own, I don't know if it's introversion or extroversion, but their own different methods that they regain their energy and that they build relationships. So just being open to learning about that and then flexing whether or not it's comfortable for you, you still as a resident teammate have a higher responsibility to work around that new person than that new person has to work around you.
Well said. All right. I think that's it for this week.
Cool. Peace out.